gentlemen, welcome once again to Mr. Jeffrey On's World History Podcast. This is episode 34, where we will deal with the aftermath of World War I, the Age of Anxiety. You might be wondering why this was an age of anxiety. Well, if you remembered what was discussed in the previous podcast, the Great War had really taken its toll on society. It showed that everything people previously thought to be right and good about the world, whether it be their form of government, their nation itself, their religion, none of it could protect people from the horrors caused by global war in the modern age. So people were left with this feeling of disillusionment. After all, most Europeans lost at least one, if not several, family members. And as Gertrude Stein put it, the generation who fought in the Great War was a lost generation. Before we get too far, remember, if you have any questions, call the Google Voice number 321-804-APWH, or if you would rather, simply email mrjeffreyon@gmail.com. Let's begin. As previously mentioned, the Great War had many important consequences for society. It gave people a sense of insecurity about the world order, but it also led to a resurgence in ideas about government and philosophy. Many people became disillusioned with democracy, which we will see had many important implications, such as the birth of new varieties of nationalism and new government forms, such as fascism and communism. The idea of progress was roundly attacked, as many saw little cause for optimism. The scientific technologies of World War I left many with the view that science and technology served mainly to create deadly weapons that would eventually overrun society. In actuality, the new technologies used in the war did end up leading to the death of millions, so these people were understandably anxious. However, a common thread throughout history occurred. The challenges created by a period of disunity and disability led to new intellectual processes. People trying to make sense of it all and create some sort of stability, which goes all the way back, if you remember, to the birth of new religious philosophies such as legalism, Taoism, and Confucianism after the period of warring states in ancient China. This is also reflected after World War I. The general malaise led many to turn towards religion. More traditional views were revived, while it also led to many changes, especially in science. The leaders of revolutions in science include Albert Einstein and Werner Heisenberg. Einstein came up with the theory of relativity, which stated that state and time were relative to the person measuring them. Heisenberg came up with the uncertainty principle, which states that a subatomic particle's position and velocity could not be known at one time. And while for AP World History, one does not need to know the physics behind these ideas, one cannot help but notice how the uncertainty principle mirrored the uncertainty of the times. While these changes were going on in science, many changes were occurring in the arts as well. New literature sprang about that reflected the sadness and depression of society after the Great War, as many young intellectuals felt the need to make sense of the world around them. Art was being transformed, a shift from traditional picture-like expectations to a more abstract method of creation that reflected individual expressionism. This was in part due to the increasing use of cameras, which led many to question why when one could take a picture of something, why would they even try to paint it the same way the picture would make it look? This new outlook on art heavily reflected the new outlook the upcoming generations were having upon society. That society was not concrete, but the illusions of many different people put together. New, more famous forms of architecture were coming about, especially after the creation of the Bauhaus in Germany in 1920. However, after the resurgence and rebirth of society in the 1920s, society would once again take a turn for the worse with the Great Depression. While many Americans have the wrong impression that it only affected the United States, the Great Depression actually was a global depression, as its destruction was seen throughout every continent. This was mainly due to the fact that everyone was borrowing money from countries who, in turn, borrowed money from another country, and in pretty much all these cases, the country that was loaning out the money was America. Also, global agriculture was in a depressed state as a decrease in prices led to many producing even more, still trying to earn the same amount of money, and what resulted was way too much supply and not enough demand. The official marker of the Great Depression is termed as Black Thursday, which was the crash of Wall Street in 1929. Many investors lost their life savings, and the stock market completely crashed. Lenders called in their loans, but those who borrowed the money did not have any way to give any money back, creating total chaos. While soon, most of the world was impacted and was inflicted not only with inflation, but heavy rates of unemployment. Places like China, being less integrated in the world economy, actually were not quite as affected as the rest of the world. The whole depressed state of the world created the need for economic experimentation, which can be seen with the ideas of John M. Keynes, who put forth that capitalism should be self-correcting and that the government should try to stimulate the economy and increase consumer demands. Someone who took this to heart was the American president Franklin Delano Roosevelt, who with his New Deal used the economic philosophy of Keynes and started massive public works projects, protected banking, established minimum wage and Social Security. But it really was not until the government spending during World War II that the United States fully escaped the Depression and recovered. Now that we have discussed the intellectual changes occurring in the time period and also the global weakening of the world economy, let's cover different countries' responses to the aftermath of the Great War. A very important political ideology that sprang up in the early 1920s is fascism, which was basically an extreme form of nationalism. A state where fascism took hold was Italy. In fact, that's where it was born, under the military dictatorship of Benito Mussolini. Italy became a one-party state, as all other parties besides the fascists were outlawed. Within fascism, the military was praised heavily and nationalistic parades were common. People were taught to do their best to serve the state and the state only. Really, fascism, although it tended to have much support among the religious, was almost a replacement of the religion. Another example of fascism during this time was Germany, under the rule of Adolf Hitler. After Germany had to face the humiliating defeat of World War I, it needed something to spring up its insanely low morale and esteem, as Germany itself was blamed as the sole country responsible for the war and was being punished by having demands placed upon it to pay reparations to the Allied powers. Adolf Hitler promised to restore Germany to its former glory. He told Germans that they were all part of a superior master race, except the Jewish people, of course. This was the same in Italy. Everything became about Italy. In Germany, everything became about Germany. However, in Italy, while it did not start out very anti-Semitic, which means being against Jewish people, it did end up following in Germany's footsteps. Hitler became the leader of the Nazi Party, and at the center of Nazi ideology was the idea of the master race, whose biggest threat, according to Hitler, were Jewish people. This led to what we now know to be the Holocaust, which will be discussed more in the next podcast. While fascism took hold in Italy and Germany, communism became the governmental institutions and philosophies guiding Russia and eventually China. In Russia, a really rough civil war occurred from the time Russia withdrew from the war in 1918 to 1920. The two sides involved in the civil war were the communists, the Bolsheviks, who are commonly referred to as the Reds, and the anti-communists, who are referred to as the Whites. The Whites could be anything from people who supported the Tsar to people that wanted a democracy. After an estimated 10 million people died, making it one of the bloodiest wars in history, the Red Side, or the Bolsheviks, won, which put communist leader Vladimir Lenin in charge. One of the first things he did when taking charge of Russia was a policy known as war communism. It's the act of nationalizing everything, or making everything come under the control of the state, including abolishing all private trade and reducing agricultural production. However, as was soon to be figured out, this plan ended up failing. So he sponsored the New Economic Policy, or the NEP, which restored the market economy, allowed for a little bit of private industry, allowed peasants to sell surplus crops, and while this actually might have benefited Russia, in the long run, Lenin died unexpectedly, which resulted in a bitter power struggle when it came to filling his place. Perhaps what came next was one of the most unfortunate events in Russian history, when a man named Joseph Stalin filled Lenin's position. He supported socialism in one country, as he believed it would give Russia an advantage over the other world economies. He announced himself an unchallenged dictator of Russia in 1928, and to replace Lenin's NEP, he put forth one of a few five-year plans, which led to the state seizing private farms, emphasized heavy industry and things besides consumer goods, and also, most important, led to the collectivization of agriculture. The collectivization of agriculture meant that the state had the right to collect all products produced by farms, and then it redistributed them where they saw fit. Many farmers, especially the wealthier ones, heavily disagreed with this policy, and overall it led to the death of 3 million peasants, either by starvation or murder. Very similar to the Holocaust, in the 1930s during the Great Purge, about 8 million Russians died in labor camps, and 3 million were victims of ethnic genocide, which is why Stalin is often named as one of the evilest people in world history. Before China joined Russia in becoming a communist nation, it was actually a republic. The Qing Dynasty fell in 1911. China established a republic, but the real power was held in the hand of wealthy warlords. During this time, China fell victim to many unequal treaties that left many areas of China in control by foreign states, leaving China defenseless. Also during this time of instability, a new political party was established, the CCP, or Chinese Communist Party, which was based on Marxist and Leninist ideologies. The two parties, the nationalist Kuomintang, headed by President Sun Yat-sen, and the CCP, later led by Mao Zedong, united against foreigners. However, after the death of the pretty moderate president Sun Yat-sen, Chiang Kai-shek came to power and ended up turning against the communists, and the two parties became much more resentful of one another, something that led to the takeover of China by communists after a civil war much, much later. So while in East Asia, China became a republic and eventually adopted communism, Japan was practicing a much more imperialistic form of government. The Great War allowed it to emerge as a new world power. However, this actually created many problems within Japanese society, as many traditional thinkers feared the increasing Western influence upon Japan, which was the basis between the internal divisions between internationalists and nationalists. Japan's relationship with China was becoming more and more strained, as Japan realized that China was weak and an easy target for imperialistic ventures. This led to the Mukden Incident. In this incident, Japanese troops dressed up like Chinese troops attacked their own railroad tracks, blamed the Chinese, and led to the Japanese takeover of Manchuria. While China and Japan faced internal division and external issues with each other and other foreign countries, India was kind of at a loss after the Great War. The formation of the Indian National Congress and the Muslim League created a common recognition of the need for independence. At the head of the movement for Indian nationalism was a figure I am sure many of you have heard of before, Mohandas K. Gandhi. He came from a wealthy Indian family and studied law in London. Later, he spent time in South Africa embracing tolerance and nonviolence. He opposed the very ancient Indian caste system, especially the very harsh treatment towards the untouchables. The British ended up passing the India Act of 1937, which gave India a modified form of self-rule. However, due to the fact that Indian princes and Muslims did not support the act, it did not end up succeeding. So during an age of unpredictability and uncertainty, many turned towards art and literature, and many towards a heavy emphasis on the state, especially those that suffered the heaviest defeats in World War I. Communism spread and took over Russia. New developments in science occurred, many of which would lead to further technological warfare seen in World War II. India had yet to see actual independence, but through the leadership of Gandhi, it was coming closer. Thank you. That wraps up today's episode. Until next time, this has been Mr. Jeffrey On's World History Podcast.